This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters.
This is Bassoff, our head of the People Speak Radio. Here, when the people speak, we make a difference. Our guest tonight is Julie Turner, pro bono lawyer for WikiLeaks. Julie has been representing both plaintiffs and defendants in intellectual property and commercial litigation matters for many years. She's litigated numerous patents, copyright, trademark, and trade secrets involving a wide range of electronics, software, and pharmaceutical technologies. She has also represented clients in the antitrust, the defamation, contract, and business tort cases. Ms. Turner has significant trial experience and first chaired multiple trials without defeat. In an NPR interview, Julie, you said this about WikiLeaks. It's time to stop kicking WikiLeaks around and start looking at what it has been disclosed. In the democratic society, we need the fourth estate to keep the citizenry so we can actually be intelligent in running our democracy. Blah, blah, blah. There I go. Now, I can't read tonight, can I? Julie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Fatima.
Julie, you are, like I am, a fan of WikiLeaks.
I am actually. I think it's a love-hate relationship, but at the very least, I think there's a role for an organization that can make it safe for whistleblowers to anonymously provide evidence of wrongdoing. Many of your listeners may or may not know that WikiLeaks started a number of years ago. First having leaked documents regarding government election abuse and other abuses in Kenya, which actually made a difference ultimately in the elections there, a huge difference, and effectively threw out an old and corrupt government. So there needs to be an organization that makes it safe for people to leak documents of political and social significance.
Let me ask you, how did you come to know Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, Julie?
Well, you know, many years ago, I learned of the WikiLeaks project, and like I just said, I believed strongly that there needs to be an organization that will provide that role. So I contacted them and simply offered to give them assistance on a case-by-case basis, and just got to know Julian a bit through helping out on a number of matters over the years.
And the kind of person that he is, based on the allegations of rape, is that something that you've ever seen in his character? I mean,
you know what?
This is a very subjective question, and this is just based on personal opinion. Go ahead.
I don't know because I don't know Julian well enough. I only know him really through WikiLeaks. I have a hard time. He's a person of incredible integrity, almost to an extreme. So it's a little hard for me to believe. But to be honest with you, I don't like to cast aspersions on people who may. Have suffered any sort of assault and even while here, I suspect that there's something else going on. I certainly don't know enough to say one way or the other.
Well, I agree with you on casting any shadow of doubt or guilt on any kind of person that's been victimized in any of these cases. But, I mean, mm-hmm. I just sure hope that when the next time my husband and I have consensual sex, that if his naked penis touches my body, that I won't call the police and have him arrested.
I suspect that Mr. Assange's notoriety played a role in the fact that any of this was ever pursued. Um, so
Well, yeah. Now let me ask you, here we have some very serious matters that involve his extradition to Sweden. My first question, why is Sweden so invested in being the liaison between the United States and the United Kingdom in extraditing Julian Assange? What have they got so, why do they have such a crick in their craw?
Well, you know, what I suspect is really going on is that Mr. Assange was in Sweden when a lot of these leaks came out, and these women came forward and claimed that they had been subject to some sexual misdeeds by Mr. Assange. And it seems to me more that, you know, the United States has been trying for a while to figure out under what law to charge Julian Assange. And from what I understand, they're currently seeking an indictment in Virginia. They chose Virginia because it's a very conservative court in a very conservative district, which is less likely to broadly interpret the First Amendment. And in any event, to get back to your question, I believe it's because Sweden's the only place that could even possibly lay a pseudo-criminal charge on him right now, such that he could be held anywhere. And the United States believes that Mr. Assange can be difficult to find when he wants to be difficult to find. And so they want him somewhere where they can reach him and probably work with Sweden to have the Interpol alert sent out so that they could get him held somewhere until the U.S. could issue an indictment.
Well, I have some quotes from two Naomis, Naomi Klein and Naomi Wolf. And Naomi Wolf wrote an article about the congratulating Interpol, and that she's really hoping that they arrest everybody in Texas University, as well as about 1.3 million people that have been accused of doing similar things. So that's one thing. Sure. You know, here we have a very ridiculous investment in time and money based on something that's ultimately very critical and very serious. A lot of our representatives, people like Mr. Lieberman, and and I say that with Senators Joe Lieberman and Dianne Feinstein, are calling for the espionage to be enacted in this case. Now, I don't know. I've read a lot about the espionage, and to be quite honest with you, that's one scary thing to enact. A lot of people during that was a very dark time in American history when the rights of people were stripped, where people were beaten, where people, the First Amendment was criminalized, that we actually had people that just by reading the First Amendment, one gentleman, I can't remember, I'm trying to think, a presidential candidate, Eugene Debs, received a 10-year prison sentence in 1918 under the Espionage Act for daring to read the First Amendment in public. Now,
that's
that
crazy.
Was the espionage, and that's what they're trying to call upon in order to crush Julian Assange. Here, how do we handle that here in America? Why do I feel that our rights are being violated and that we're next?
You know, it's a big problem. The Espionage Act is pretty broad. It makes it a crime. It was drafted in 1917, if I'm not mistaken. And it makes it a crime to steal classified information, which is still a crime. And I think many people would agree that that's okay. It makes it a crime to publish classified information that one receives, even if one did not do anything wrongful in the receipt of that. And I think therein lies the problem and the discomfort, because when you think of publishers of government information, at least I think of things like the New York Times and the Pentagon Papers and documents that the government will classify in order to be cautious and to prevent possible embarrassment. I think the real problem is having a system of checks and balances that is effective on what the government can maintain as classified, that truly narrowly limits what the government may maintain a secret to things that are of significant national security importance. Our government tends to overclassify things. And I don't know about you. I would have a problem with someone stealing from the government, you know, the invasion plans of Normandy, and then having a big newspaper publish them before the invasion occurs. I think that would be troubling.
I agree.
But having, so there is a place for having classified information that the government should prevent the publication of. But the question is where you draw the line.
I think too, you know, we have a government that went to war based on a lie.
Yes.
And under those circumstances, don't we, the people that are being sent to fight these wars, to die in these foreign wars, have a right to challenge the authority of the people that sent us there under a false premise?
I think that's right. I think that we, in fact, I think not only do we have a right, we have an obligation to find out the truth, because and it's the media, the Fourth Estate, which is in the unique position of having that as their livelihood, as their job, as their role, is to dig and dig until they find out the truth, not to simply rely on government spokespeople, but to seek out information. And getting back to WikiLeaks, where a lot of this turmoil with the U.S. government started was when WikiLeaks put up the video of the U.S. gunship shooting certain Iraqis. The video was of an event that occurred, I believe, 4 years ago or some number of years ago. Mm-hmm. And two Reuters journalists had been killed as part of that attack. They were photographers, I believe. And Reuters itself sought release of that video for years through the Freedom of Information Act. And their efforts were blocked. The U.S. government did not release the video, and it was taking them a long time. They still hadn't gotten released through the Freedom of Information Act by the time that the video was leaked to WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks put that online.
We have a caller.
It raises the question of... It raises the question then of is the way that the Freedom of Information Act or FOIA is the way that it's being implemented useful, workable, and that is a big issue that gives rise to something like the WikiLeaks phenomenon.
Unbelievable. Well, I guess we have a caller on line one. Caller, your name and your question for Julie.
I guess that's me. It's Gary from the Pal Talk News Network. Thank you, Basma, and thank you, Julie, for coming on and answering these questions. It's great to talk to an attorney who has a connection to WikiLeaks. I was just listening to the point you made that the Espionage Act makes it a crime to publish classified information that one receives, even if one didn't do anything wrongful in the receipt of it. So the question I have is, if the United States government does indict Mr. Assange for allegedly violating the Espionage Act, as it appears the government is prepared to do. Well, doesn't this put in peril the New York Times, the other publications that also have reported on what the WikiLeaks folks have procured?
Yes, it does. And in fact, that's a very interesting point that you raised, because I think at the beginning of this whole WikiLeaks hullabaloo, with the most recent release of the State Department cables, media organizations, including the New York Times, roundly rebuked WikiLeaks and Julian Assange and criticized him and did not challenge the call for his assassination or being brought up on charges of treason, even though he's not a U.S. citizen, until Joe Lieberman made the point that, well, geez, maybe the New York Times is equally guilty for writing articles based on this classified information. And I suspect the U.S. government will try to distinguish Mr. Assange from the New York Times by claiming, one, you know, that the latter is a journalist, and for whatever reason that Mr. Assange is not. But that's patently false, because what Mr. Assange does is he receives information, he summarizes it, thereby reporting on it, and he just happens to make his source material public. He's on the internet, so he can do that. Whereas the New York Times, they give hyperlinks to source material sometimes, so it's pretty much the same kind of thing.
I think it has a chilling effect on the First Amendment, not just with regard to Julian Assange, but with regard to all of us, journalists and non-journalists alike. Thank you for answering the question.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling in, Gary. John from the Canadian Rockies has a question for you, Ms. Turner. He says, Ms. Turner, from your perspective, what can we as citizens do to keep secure WikiLeaks and Julian Assange? In particular, I have deep concern about death threats and assassination. In your opinion, will these offenders be prosecuted?
I don't know. I mean, the only death threats I've been hearing have been from government official in Canada, and people like Sarah Palin. I doubt they'll be prosecuted. More low level, I tend to doubt it, unless somebody takes some serious steps. And you know, it's really hard to say. I don't like to get into speculation as to what a government may or may not do vis-a-vis a person's life, but. I don't know that the U.S. government is all that interested in tracking down people who might threaten Mr. Assange.
Or in protecting Mr. Assange. And gee, I thought Sarah Palin only shot moose. You know, I have some concerns. The New York, do you feel that the mainstream media here, when you talk about the Fourth Estate, I'm not sure if a lot of people understand what the Fourth Estate is and what the relationship of the Fourth Estate is to the news media today, but it's more.
Yeah.
It's a lot more. And I think that we have something very valuable that is at stake here. And this is probably, in my opinion, one of the greatest stories of this decade.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you. Well, you know, to get to the notion of the Fourth Estate, we have a government that has three branches, and the three branches are established so that they can have checks and balances on one another. The executive, the presidency, executes the laws, the Congress passes the laws, and the courts interpret and enforce the laws, and they all have checks and balances so that if one of them steps out of line, arguably another branch can come in and check that kind of behavior. The Fourth Estate is the notion that over the government, the media, the journalists act as a check on government abuse of power. So that if the three branches are not, you know, doing what they need to do to check it, we have as a failsafe the media, who is there to investigate and disclose truth about what is going on. And if the media cannot perform that function free of a fear of prosecution, then we've jeopardized the ability in an open society to actually govern ourselves.
Well, let me ask you, excuse me, I believe it was a gentleman, a reverend during the World War II that had said that the first loss of democracy is the loss of a free press. I can't remember. Blumenthal, I think, was his name. Maybe I'm wrong, but something like that. My concern is, if this is the case, and if we have an obligation, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, we do have an obligation as citizens under the Constitution of this country to call out and to challenge our government when they are doing things that are not in the best interest of our country. And obviously, a lot of that is happening these days. Do you believe we still have a free press in the United States and that it has the power to alter or change anything?
I do. I believe we do have a free press in the United States. I believe that unfortunately, the free press has come more under the influence of big business. It's unfortunate. But having said that, I think that even though large media outlets are being constrained by the businesses to whom they're beholden, that there are people on the Internet, because of the Internet, you can publish very inexpensively and very quickly. who are providing good information and who are being more investigative. It is difficult to find out the truth, and it costs money, and that's why certain organizations traditionally have had to do a lot of fundraising, such as Mother Jones, to do the kind of investigative reporting that puts together a whole story. And unfortunately, there may be some demise to that, but I think all the more reason why we need things like WikiLeaks or the new OpenLeaks that will be coming online, hopefully, to allow people to get to, you know, newspapers and other entities' information that's of real importance.
Well, I say hoorah for the copycats, because we have to understand the nature of what's going to happen here. This is huge, and people are waiting. And copycats are going to be a dime a dozen after this. It's like I hardly see why they are spending so much time on Julian. I don't think they're threatening anybody by this. In fact, I think a lot of people would see this as an open challenge to them to provide with this kind of information. Let me ask you, do you think there's a conflict between freedom of the press and the national security in this country?
I think there's a balance, and that's what the First Amendment seeks to address. Mm-hmm. Like you and I said before, we don't want someone to be able to simply publish the invasion plans on Normandy in the middle of the Second World War 2 days before it's going to happen. So there needs to be a balance. We need to be able to trust the courts to draw that balance appropriately. The U.S. government, unfortunately, like any institution, shows they're conservative. They want to hold on to things and not disclose them because it's less painful to simply keep something a secret than to have to explain it to people. So they have a preference for keeping things secret, and in any given situation, they will err on the side of keeping something confidential. We need the courts to provide an appropriate scrutiny through Freedom of Information Act, to any documents that any individual requests the government disclose.
Let me ask you, the grand jury has convened to indict Assange. How do you think that's going to pan out? What are we to look for?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I certainly don't want to speculate on what could happen in the grand jury. I have no insight into it, so it would purely be speculation.
Unreal. And as far as and this is unfortunate, because if women or someone has been assaulted in this this battle, I think that what ends up happening is that it's a very vital situation becomes lost in all of this espionage kind of Mahdi-Hari-ism that seems to have taken and gripped our society these days.
But, you know, one thing to remember, Julian Assange is not WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks is not Julian Assange. You know, Julian Assange is one person who happened to have taken on more of the public face of WikiLeaks. But there are other people, as we can see by the fact that WikiLeaks continues to publish things of importance, even while Mr. Assange is in jail. So Mr. Assange has been caught with some allegations against him and is being held, and ultimately I suspect will be extradited to the U.S. or Sweden or both. But it's bigger than him. You know, it is a desire on the part of a lot of people to have a place where the truth will out, so that citizens, people of the world, can see what's going on in the government and can act accordingly, like happened in Kenya.
Let me ask you, I know, according to WikiLeaks, that there is an if something happens to WikiLeaks, cables will be released. Classified information that, from my understanding, that Julian Assange has set up to be released. If that, and so obviously you're right. You're absolutely right. Julian Assange does not make WikiLeaks. Do you think that they would try to shut down WikiLeaks completely at that point?
Oh, they've already tried to shut down WikiLeaks completely, and they continue to. You know, I don't know too much about this, quote, poison pill or insurance policy. I really have no specific insight into that, but I do know that you know, Mr. Lieberman, Senator Lieberman, and others in the government have spoken to PayPal and Amazon and MasterCard and Visa to get them to stop processing payments to WikiLeaks, to stop posting WikiLeaks. I do know that Dynadot, which is the domain registrar for WikiLeaks, has shut down, has locked down the WikiLeaks.org domain. I do know that EveryDNS, which is the entity that basically converts the WikiLeaks.org URL to the IP address, has removed WikiLeaks.org from that conversion, so it no longer renders the website. I do know that I heard another gentleman who was hosted on a different host and was hosting a mirror for WikiLeaks suddenly had his website yanked without any notice to him. So I don't think it matters whether or not this supposed poison pill occurs. I think there is a concerted effort currently by the government to shut down access to WikiLeaks. The internet doesn't work that way, so it's exceedingly difficult for them to do that.
Legally, anyway. We have one more question from Ray in Nebraska for you. How can we as regular people demand that we have total freedom of the press so we're not being lied to?
Well, ways to demand it. It's difficult. I mean, you can always write to your representative. I don't know how effective that is. You can, I believe there is a website that's dedicated to, for the moment at least, sponsoring protests, supporting Mr. Assange in this struggle. You can donate money to WikiLeaks, although that's more challenging now. If you have a Visa or MasterCard, you might choose to register a complaint with them and tell them you're not going to use their card until they change their mind. You can, they're really, it's very difficult to deal individually with these powers. But one thing you should do is write op-ed pieces, write and speak out that, you know, this person, Mr. Assange, who's been vilified, I mean, terrible, terrible things have been said against him by people who just don't know what's going on. They don't know the facts. They don't know that Mr. Assange, for example, did not hack into any government classified databases. Or, you know, people assume all sorts of bad things about this person who is a journalist.
I have one more question that kind of speaks to this. Chirper in Canada asks, if Assange isn't WikiLeaks, why is he in jail?
Well, Assange is in jail because he was the person that the U.S. could associate with WikiLeaks, and he was also the person speaking out about documents that were being posted, and he's the public face. And so, you know, that's why.
And the squeaky wheel. I know we're pushing it, but we have one more question from a guest.
Sure.
And Pete in Texas asked, Julie, how can American law be enforced on a citizen of another country when that individual is not a citizen of the U.S. or on U.S. soil?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. And to be frank, I'm not really sure of the answer. I think the way, you know, this is, in legalese, a jurisdictional question. Can the United States impose its law, which should arguably just be for events or things that happen in the U.S., on activities that occur outside the U.S.? And when we have the internet, it becomes easier for the U.S. to argue that things have occurred in the United States because WikiLeaks made available certain documents that the government had classified, made them available in the United States. And so the government will claim that that's enough to give jurisdiction over the person who engaged in that activity, even though that person is a foreigner and was outside of the United States when that activity occurred.
Well, I'll tell you, Julie, you have been extremely informative. I truly appreciate your being with us, and perhaps we can call you back as what happens to Julian proceeds, and you know, kind of keep base touch with you on the legalities of what's going to be happening in the days to come.
Absolutely, and thanks very much for letting me speak, and I hope your listeners will take to heart the importance of the First Amendment in guaranteeing the freedoms of our democracy. It's the cornerstone of our democracy. And you know, please, you know, don't just swallow hook, line, and sinker everything you're told about, you know, Mr. Assange or WikiLeaks. Realize that they're incredibly brave people who are doing the best they can.
Julie Turner, folks, pro bono lawyer for WikiLeaks. Thank you, Julie, for being with us. And I have one little statement. This is from Naomi Wolf. Thank you again, Interpol. I know you will now prioritize the global manhunt for 1.3 million guys I have heard similar complaints about personally in the U.S. alone. There is an entire fraternity at the University of Texas you will need to arrest immediately. I also have firsthand information that John Smith in Providence, Rhode Island, went to a stag party with strippers that his girlfriend wanted him to skip, and that Mark Levinson in Corvallis, Oregon, didn't notice that his girlfriend got a really cute new haircut, even though it was 3 inches shorter. Karis, go get him, Interpol. Yours gratefully, Naomi Wolf. Thank you, Julie. It was a pleasure
Thank
having you,
you
on.
Take
More
care
power.
Now.
I say Julian for president. Goodbye, everyone. It's been a pleasure. Well, there you are, folks. Thank you very much. I appreciate all of you being with us this evening. We're cutting our show short by half an hour today based on our guests, but I thank you all. Hopefully you all will all have an incredible holiday season. I know I will. For those that celebrate Christmas, Merry Christmas. For those that do not, a blessed season, no matter who and where you are. Thank you. And have a wonderful evening, everyone. And let the people speak. That's what the show's all about. The people must speak.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office of summer people. And they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land made for you and me.